Hello and welcome to the J-Rod Sports Pod with me, James Robson.
And me, Ollie Dix.
So today, Ollie and I are going to be taking a brief look at what we've decided are the five main news stories from the world of sports this week. Looking at the NFL, the NBA, and a sport we don't cover very often, but there's a record that's been equaled that we want to talk about. So we'll be looking at Rafa Nadal's tennis achievements right at the end of the podcast. So let's jump straight into the conversation that Ollie and I are having about the biggest news this week. Right, so Ollie, let's start with the NBA then, because we've got a fair bit of news coming out of the league, but primarily not on the playing side. So let's start with the Los Angeles Clippers then. They have parted ways with Doc Rivers. Yep. And who have they got to replace it?
So Ty Lue. So if people remember when LeBron was in Cleveland, after year one, they brought Ty Lue in to lead it because it was felt as though LeBron basically got on better with him and he was more of a player's coach. But unfortunately for Ty, his success was also tied to LeBron's. So actually, we've not seen him as a head coach without LeBron. Now, he was working under Doc Rivers in Los Angeles. So this group of players isn't new to him. But he's made that step up now as head coach. And so, yeah.
So, I mean, it's not a massive change of scenery. It's not a massive change of scene for the players. It's not... Are we going to see a Clippers team that looks vastly different? I don't think so.
No, because I think... Okay, like, did they choke? Yes. You know, they blew that 3-1 lead. We all saw it and we all confirmed it. Ultimately, when you look at the group of players that they have there, they all reflect and bounce off each other very well. It was a matter of actually how can you get the best out of this group of players rather than trying to somehow reinvent the whole system. I think it's more of a matter of we only saw that starting five start together like less than 20 games last year, and that's not going to win you games when it comes down to the playoffs. And so I think actually Doc had been there too long. He'd gone through two sets of pretty good teams that underperformed massively, and I think it was time for a change of scenery, like for him and for the Clippers to go in a different direction.
And he was without a job for all of about 24 hours.
Yeah, I mean, probably less.
Yeah,
so I think he got on a plane straight away.
So he is now the head coach of the Philadelphia 76ers.
Yep.
Who do you think benefits from these coaching changes more? Do you think Ty Lue will have more of an impact on the Clippers, or do you think Doc Rivers will have more of an impact on a talented 76ers team, but one that's struggled of late?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to... I think most people would go in the direction of Doc and the 76ers. But I think, unfortunately, the 76ers' success, or lack of, has been continually tied to injuries. Like, it's either Ben Simmons has got injured, so it's just Joel Embiid on his own, pretty much, as their main guy, or it's the other way around. And so, like, there's never been a consistent part. Again, like with the Clippers, there's never been a consistent part where they've had both guys together. What will be interesting, actually, is the 76ers have never figured out a system that works with Ben Simmons having the ball in his hands and being a small forward, you know, that kind of LeBron point guard idea. And so it would be interesting to see if Doc can somehow work that in and let both of them get theirs. Because we forget Jimmy Butler was on the 76ers, you know, and that didn't work. So there's definitely potential there.
Yeah, I think I like Doc Rivers, but there was an amazing joke that was made when Andy Murray hired Ivan Lendl to be his coach to try and win a Grand Slam, and Ivan Lendl was famously one of the best tennis players never to win a Grand Slam.
Yeah.
It seems like hiring Doc Rivers to be a head coach to try and win a championship is sort of juxtaposition, because he's famous for never quite getting there.
Well, yeah, I mean, you think back to Lob City. You know, it was one of the most exciting NBA teams that we have ever seen. You know, with Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan. They're all at separate teams now.
Elsewhere.
And so I think, you know, you have to, you attribute the lack of success where Doc has been to Doc, but I don't think you attribute the success that Ty Lue has had to Ty Lue, because you've seen LeBron go to like two other teams and win championships there. So it's a bit like, I think this is very much Ty Lue's chance to prove himself and separate his legacy from LeBron. Is it doable?
No.
He signed a 5-year deal. Do the Clippers win a championship in these next 5 years?
No, I don't think so.
Do Kawhi and Paul George stay together for the next 5 years?
Like,
how many times do they fail? Because ultimately, not getting a championship is a failure, I think, for the Clippers.
Yeah, yeah.
How many times do they fail before they have to kind of think, right, well, let's try someone else or something different?
I think it will be shorter than we anticipate. Like, yeah. I think if it doesn't go well next year, because I think they were aware of how close they were this year.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't go well next year, they're not at points in their career where they want to be part of a program that's rebuilding. And there are good teams, a lot of good teams around with young talent. I mean, we've spoken at length about the Heat team. AD's come out and said he's going to re-sign with the Lakers. You know, and then you've got to throw into the conversation, and I mean, this is a bit of a strange one, but, well, you've got the Nets that are coming back with
Kyrie and KD.
You've got the Golden State Warriors, who are sort of have somehow ended up being potentially the most talented team with a top 5 draft pick ever.
Yeah, no, for sure.
So there are lots of young teams that are sort of up and coming in the league, and I actually think if it doesn't work this year, you're going to get those two going, we're going to look elsewhere.
Well, I think this is also like the toughest the West has been for a while.
Yeah.
Like you just said, like, I think we very quickly have forgotten about Denver.
Yeah.
You know, and like you said, actually, the Warriors will very quickly be a very good team.
Back in the conversation.
Yeah, the Pelicans, you have to expect that they'll somehow be. And then, like, you think about Portland as well. Like, if Portland can play some form of basketball for the entirety of the season that it did in the bubble, then they're a playoff team as well. And suddenly you're just, that's a whole mess of what the Western Conference will look like next year. And getting through all of those teams will be incredible.
Yeah. Right, so turning our attention to the second bit of news that we've got coming out of the NBA this week. The Houston Rockets have parted way with Daryl Morey, who's the general manager. He took over in the 2007-2008 season. And since then, the Rockets are only second to the Spurs when it comes to win percentages. But they've always struggled to get over that final hurdle, haven't they?
Yeah, no, they have. I think they've won 50 games in a season like 7 times, and it's pretty good going. And they've always been a very, very, very good regular season team. But when it comes to the playoffs, teams can... So through the regular season, teams don't necessarily play... They just play their defense and they play their offense. They don't break down specifics to who you're actually playing. It's only when that comes into the playoffs that all starts to happen. And it seems the Rockets can have regular season success with James Harden having the ball 70% of the time and doing a high pick and roll. But in the playoffs, that isn't sustainable with just one guy doing it. And I think they tried this small ball for a little, like for 2 years. They've gotten rid of Mike D'Antoni, you know, so I think this is very much a clear house option, and let's start again and rebuild this culture.
So we're essentially saying it's the way they play basketball is complicated enough to trick people during the regular season, but simple enough that if you actually look at it and try and figure it out, you can.
If you give a team or certain players or certain coaches like a season's worth of film and then a week to break it down and plan for it, you know, that they are very beatable. And for them to lose to the Lakers in five just showed that actually are they built to maybe have a shootout with the Warriors? Maybe. Is that the direction that teams went in? Because that's what they thought they were going in, because the Warriors dominated for so long. Maybe. But now you've seen teams like the Nuggets have Jokic inside. You've got the Lakers that have AD and LeBron and can play big. And, you know, Dwight Howard, JaVale McGee, Markieff Morris, you know, so on, that can play big. And actually then you don't have a Rockets team that can handle that. And very quickly your strategy of winning becomes, like, futile.
Yeah. I mean, I do think when it comes to stuff like this, you know, with teams that struggle to make that final step, I do think, I mean, if they've been so good in the regular season, I do think a certain amount of scrutiny has to fall on the organisation. And that's why I don't actually mind this move of the Rockets moving on from the general manager, because, you know, the general manager's role is to build the team. And if the team isn't getting to where they need to, it's not necessarily anything to do with the players not giving, you know, enough or not making the shots and stuff. Actually, maybe the team is built for regular season success but hasn't got those big time players that you do need in the playoffs. You do need people when the pressure's up, when the expectations are up, who are going to want to put the team on their back and take them there.
Yeah.
And I think that does have to fall on the organisational side a little bit.
I think what's hard as well is that, so they obviously traded for Chris Paul.
Yeah.
And then it didn't work out having both Chris Paul and James Harden there. So they traded Chris Paul to the Thunder and got Russell Westbrook. And they traded a lot away to get Russ as well. And that now hasn't worked out. Do you think they have to move on from James Harden? Because I equate this Rockets team quite nicely to the Bucks in the East.
Yeah.
You know, Giannis can win you regular season games single-handedly most of the times. Both of these players have won MVPs. They're great regular season players, but have had very little success in the playoffs. And that's what it comes down to in the NBA.
I think the reason that you would trade Harden away is, I think the value that you would get in return for him is still quite high.
I think it's massive.
And I think every year he plays, I know it sounds kind of obvious, but that depletes. I think it's starting to go down.
Yeah.
And I think they're on the edge of the cliff, and I think he's still valuable enough to get a really good return for it. But give it a year.
Yeah.
It might be, at that point, people are looking to get James Harden for a bargain, as opposed to get James Harden, our guy.
Yeah, no, I agree. Anywhere that jumps out to you that, like, obviously, you know, we haven't got all the information of picks or salary caps right now in front of us, but just based off of feel, like, anywhere that jumps out to you, like, God, get him there, you know? We've seen, like, rumours that the Heat are going to really try and make a run at getting Giannis, you know, like, can they go in a different direction? Does Harden need to be a leader now where he goes? Can he play second fiddle to someone?
I like the idea of him going to Denver.
Really?
Yeah, because they never got it done in the postseason, but they showed in the regular season that they could, you know, he can.
There's a lot of young talent there as well, isn't there?
Yeah, and he can lead a team, but not necessarily be the best player on the team. You know what I mean? And that, I think that would be the situation in Denver.
Yeah.
You know, you've got those young, talented guys, and actually he could be the sort of leader of personalities and take them to the mentality they need to get to success, but then not necessarily be the focal point of defenses, which means he might be freed up to kind of do a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, we see him lead the NBA in scoring when it's all focus on him. Like, everyone knows it's going through him. So actually, you spread it out a bit, and maybe that's what he needs to have success. We look at the Rockets not falling apart, but being taken apart. How sad is it to see potentially, like, we look back to that 2011 OKC team that had Westbrook, Harden, and KD. Do we wish we'd gotten more of them, like, together of that OKC team? Have they actually all done worse on their own than they probably ever would have? Obviously, KD got his rings, but nobody thinks he really earned those, you know?
I mean, I think it's definitely sad that we never kind of got to see that project working.
Yeah.
Like, we did, but not to the extent we wanted. Yeah, not to the extent we'd expected. Yeah. And I think that's the regret. Do I think they would have been better off together? Probably. But I don't think they would have made it work.
There's a lot of, if we look everywhere they've gone, like Westbrook always was ball hungry. Harden always needed the ball. Durant's the only one that's shown he could almost play off someone.
I think that took a lot of humility from him. Like, I don't think that was something. I think when he was at OKC, he was more leaning towards, I want to be the guy. And then he went somewhere where
They already had a guy.
And also Steve Kerr was very much like, because Steve Kerr was that guy.
Yeah.
You know, he was the guy who got 5 or 6 shots a game and had to make an impact when he could. Obviously, KD's going to be a bigger part than that, but he was able to make KD realise that he could still be useful without the ball in his hand.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Okay, let's turn our attention now to the NFL, because we've got two big bits of news. So let's start with the New Orleans Saints, because Michael Thomas and the Saints are, let's say, at loggerheads at the moment. Thomas didn't play on this weekend because he had a fight or a little skirmish with one of the defensive backs that was covering him in practice, and subsequently, I mean, was accused of disrespecting a coach and was suspended for conduct detrimental to the team. Do we think this is the end of the road for the Saints and Michael Thomas? And if we do, who comes off worse?
I think if you're the Saints, you somehow have to figure this out and work it back to a relationship that's happy and that's working. We saw last year he was arguably the best wide receiver in the game based off production. Is he your first choice? Probably not. Okay, but actually he's shown that he can be a number one wide receiver, and the production levels are insanely high. And I think if the Saints lose him, they really struggle on offense. And so if he leaves, I think he certainly comes off better. Okay. I almost see this being a bit like a Hopkins Texans situation.
Yeah.
Where, if you know, Hopkins is certainly better off now.
Yeah.
What
I would say is, I think there's a bit of information in this whole scenario which is overlooked, and that is, in most NFL contracts, and I'm 99% sure it's in Michael Thomas's contract, if you are suspended for conduct detrimental to the team, your guaranteed money is eliminated.
Right.
So if the Saints want to move on from him next year, say, if they go into a rebuild, they don't owe him any money.
What? So as in he gets cut, or he doesn't get his money?
If when he's there and playing for them, he gets the money that is signed on the contract.
Right, yeah.
But if they release him,
yeah,
they don't have to pay him the full value of the contract.
Okay.
So this might have been a situation where Sean Payton kind of went, that's probably just about bad enough to count as conduct detrimental to the team. If we suspend him for a week here, then we might be able to get out of paying him $15 million or whatever it is next year.
So you think they're playing a long game here?
No, I just think it's an opportunity that I wouldn't put it past NFL teams to utilize.
Yeah, make use of.
How
have the Saints missed him? Do you think Breeze is what we would argue somewhat of a decline is also corresponding or correlates with the lack of Michael Thomas? Because he wasn't around for the 2 weeks before either. I think he was injured and a bit ill. You know, like, do those two actually correspond, or is it just happened to be a correlation of the two?
I think they do. I think they are linked.
Right, yeah.
Because when you've got someone like that who actually... Drew Brees can sort of glance his way and see him maybe half a yard open and just throw it up there and let him go and get it.
Yeah.
And against most defensive backs, he's going to come down with the ball. So I think he's a good outlet valve for him there of just like, oh, okay, it's third and six. Who am I going to?
Michael relieve Thomas. some pressure.
Yeah. And I think that he's not then trying to force other throws to other guys.
Yeah.
He knows that if he doesn't like the look he's got, he can just, boom, there's my next one. So, I think they are linked, but I don't think this is the end of the road for Michael Thomas and the Saints.
It's just an area to watch, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. But the next item of news that we've got to get onto is Le'Veon Bell has been released by the New York Jets. Attempts to trade him were unsuccessful, and you know this is the end of the road for the Jets and Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah.
And interestingly, three teams have shown interest.
Yep.
And they just so happen to be the Jets' next three opponents.
Yeah.
So that is the Dolphins, the Miami Dolphins, the Buffalo Bills, and the Kansas City Chiefs. Which of those three do you think is the best fit?
Well, so just as we're recording this, Booster on the phone, the Bills are no longer involved in that. Bills now come out and said, well, not come out and said, but basically either he said, I don't want to go there, or they've pulled out. I would have said that was a really great place for him to go.
Yeah.
They're certainly a place you want to be over the next 3 or 4 years, I would argue. I don't know what's best for him in this situation. I think if he goes to the Chiefs, he has to play second fiddle, because they're not just going to completely, you know, wipe out the work that they've done there with their new rookie.
Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Yeah, I knew you'd know it. But so at the same time, like, that's not going to give him the opportunity, I don't think, for him to revitalize his career. But I think if he goes to the Dolphins, okay, yeah, they've got Matt Breida there, who, you know, pretty good. But I think it gives him the opportunity to potentially be running back one. And I think it then gives you the opportunity to where, you know, at the moment, okay, Fitzmagic's there, but at some point you're going to get Tua. So one, it gives you the opportunity to potentially get paid a little bit more, because Tua's going to be on his rookie contract. But it also means that you are going to be a massive part of the offense, because they need a good running game, because you can't go out and into his first season or his first games, go and ask him to throw 40, 50 times and there somehow be some success to that. So I think it's interesting. If you go to the Chiefs, you're almost trying to guarantee a ring, and then maybe he'll go somewhere else and that's like the nice bit of his career done. But I think if you go to the Dolphins, you're going long haul, and that's more potentially personal achievements.
I disagree.
Really?
I think the Chiefs are a much better fit, because they've got a much better offensive line. And the way that Le'Veon Bell is actually so good at running the ball is he's so patient with moving forward. Like, he will allow blocks to develop so that his offensive line creates space for him to move through. I think that's one of the reasons why it worked so well in Pittsburgh, is because they've always had good line play.
Yeah.
Why it didn't work anywhere near as well in New York, because they've got dreadful offensive line play.
He played 12 games as well.
Yeah, but he needs that. He needs those holes to be created, and then he goes like and makes the most of it.
Yeah.
The other thing that is important to remember here, and this is another, I got quite into contracts this week.
Yeah.
Important. So he's been released and he's guaranteed $6 million this year by the Jets. Basically, whatever he is paid now by someone else is offset against that Jets money.
Right.
So he will be looking for, you know, to get veteran minimum, which for him is $850,000 this year, and then the Jets will pay him the remaining $5.1 million.
Yep.
So there's no need, there's no rush for him to sign a big contract because he's getting the money that he's already signed for.
No, I didn't mean that the Dolphins will pay him now.
No, I'm aware. But I don't think the offensive line in Miami will allow him to revitalize his career and produce the numbers that he can produce.
Really?
And actually, he's shown because he sat out in Pittsburgh and because he's, you know, he's been here and there with injuries, he's not concerned about not playing, if that makes sense. Like he's happy to not put tread on the tires because everyone knows that his stock is so high.
Yeah.
And I think if he went to Miami, by being running back one, he'd be used quite a lot in situations where for him there's not much gain.
No, okay, I get that. I wouldn't say there's a massive gap between him and Breida. I would argue, okay, like we are very much assuming that Le'Veon Bell is Le'Veon Bell. That, you know, okay, like, I think he played 12 games, earned $28 million over the last 2 years with the Jets.
That's good numbers.
That is very good numbers. But actually, like, you expect these guys to somewhat make some of their own. And we never saw just one game where Le'Veon Bell, you know, went out and got his own, even if it was like it didn't benefit the team in any way. And I think that's where, like, I would be a bit skeptical. Okay, it's almost, if he goes down the route like you just said, if he can go to the Chiefs, get the vets minimum, go there for a year, potentially win a ring, then that's great. And I think that then opens up so many avenues. The only other thing that I would say for the Dolphins is that's where his own training, like, that's where he goes to train.
Also, they're in the division.
Well, also so important.
He gets to play them twice.
Yeah, and he knows how bad that Jets team is. So that's two games where he's going to absolutely rack up some numbers.
Yeah.
And I would say, actually, okay, like, that Dolphins offensive line might not be great, but it's still got guys like Laramie Tunsil in, who's a Pro Bowl offensive lineman, you know? And yeah. So there's certainly, it's definitely building, and it's in that direction. What I would say as well is that he probably feels, unfortunately for Dolphins, happier going to someone like Andy Reid, who's an offensive-minded coach, than someone like Brian Flores, who actually, we've seen the Dolphins have gone down the route of good defense, offense second, you know? And that's one where Bell might not be a focus as much as you might potentially think, or I potentially think.
Right, now the last thing we've got to talk about is last weekend, Rafael Nadal won his 13th French Open title, and he's now equaled Roger Federer for the most all-time Grand Slam wins for a men's player. 20 Grand Slam wins. Djokovic is 3 back on 17 victories in total, most of them at the Australian Open. In an era that's been sort of dominated by those three, who will finish with the most, considering we're coming to that twilight zone of the era?
No, for sure. And this brings me on nicely to a fun fact, and where I repose a different question to you. So you said Nadal's won 13 French Open titles. He won 4 consecutive, 05, 06, 07, 08. He then had a gap 2 years, or he didn't win in 2009, sorry. He then won 5 consecutive, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Had a gap of, he didn't win in 15 or 16. and has now won four straight again, 17, 18, 19, 20. So he won four straight, then he won five straight, and he's currently winning four straight. Does he win six straight? Does that nice trend carry on?
I can't see why not. That's why I think the answer to this question is Rafa Nadal.
Yeah, no, and that's, yeah.
Because I think there are players, like Roger Federer was so unbelievably dominant on the grass.
And an artist everywhere.
Yeah. But I feel like now there are people who can beat him on grass.
Yep.
Djokovic was so good on the hard courts, but now there are people who can beat him on the hard courts. Nadal has been so good on the clay, and no one can beat him yet on the clay.
And better on clay, I would argue, than the rest have been elsewhere.
Oh.
More dominant.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, yeah.
Like, when the others have won on grass or won on the hard courts, it's gone to, like, four sets, five sets. There's been, like, a lot of games lost. Nadal doesn't lose many games, never mind sets, never mind matches on clay.
Yeah, I mean, point proven in the French Open final last week, where it was, what was it, 6-2,
6-love, and then 6-4.
Yeah, 6-5 or 6-4. Yeah, 6-4. Like, the work was done after the first two sets.
Yeah, no, you know? It is. What I would say is, I agree. Nadal probably finishes with the most. And given how fit he is, probably has the most longevity in there as well. Because even, you know, what we're looking at, I would say that I personally believe Federer was the best out of that group.
I agree.
But I do think at times Djokovic was absolutely incredible.
I mean, Federer was the reason I watched tennis.
Oh, for sure. But and I think, unfortunately for Nadal, he almost lived in Federer's shadow for so long.
Yeah.
And that, like, he'll never have that appeal.
No. I think when it comes to Djokovic, he's the most entertaining to watch. I think the way he won was never like, Nadal was all like, it was so powerful, it was so aggressive, it was so
suave.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas Roger Federer was more just sort of making the most of what he had, but very pretty tennis.
He floated around the court, yeah, didn't he?
And it, you know, that single-handed backhand is arguably one of the prettiest things in sport.
And iconic.
Yeah. Whereas when it comes to Djokovic, he kind of plays down the middle tennis, but just very, very well.
And works so hard.
And so I think that's why he's not memorable. Like, if you picture Nadal playing tennis, you see him on clay sliding around, but hitting like massive shots from the baseline, really aggressive serves.
Yeah,
and things like
so
that.
Much topspin.
Yeah, you think about Federer running around, prancing around centre court at Wimbledon, hitting that single-handed backhand, pinning people in the corner.
Or through the legs.
Baseline rallies, yeah. But then you think of Djokovic and you don't really know what to think.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, you know, what is that snapshot moment that you have of Djokovic's career where you're like, that was absolutely classic Djokovic. I don't really know what classic Djokovic is.
No.
And so to me, that's why I think the other two are a little bit above him, but what he has done is he has always been close.
Yeah.
He's always been formidable in all of the slams.
Do you think, so these three combined have won 57 Grand Slams, ranging over what, the last 15, 20 years? Who missed out the most because of these three?
Murray.
Do you think?
Yeah.
Like, no doubt?
No doubt.
Do you think, like, guys like Wawrinka or Songa or even Cilic have in better careers if those Grand Slam titles actually, if one of them goes by, it potentially goes up to, like, three or four instead of maybe, like, just the one?
I think...
Was Murray ever potentially gonna go on to this that next step, or?
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, Murray was world number one while these guys were playing.
Okay, no, I get that, but
what I'm saying is, like, I genuinely think he is potentially the unluckiest tennis player out there. Not only with the injury,
yeah,
but also with just the fact that, like, how many finals he made, how many semifinals he made, and didn't play badly, was just outplayed.
Yeah,
and you could see it absolutely grating on him. I mean, how many Australian Opens did he make and has never won there?
Yeah.
You know, and then that Wimbledon final was heartbreaking. And then to finally get the monkey off his back at the US Open, then the two Wimbledon titles were amazing. But, I mean, he, in a different era, he could very easily have won...
Plus 10.
Yeah, I don't think he'd have ever won the French.
Yeah.
But I can definitely see him. I mean, he's obviously won the US and Wimbledon, but he could have very easily won 3 or 4 Australian Opens.
Yeah.
And maybe the same, you know, Wimbledons. He could, if those three weren't there, he could easily be on 12, 13 majors right now.
Yeah.
Grand Slams.
I say, in my personal opinion, that Serena Williams is the greatest tennis player of all time. Male or female.
Yeah.
And because I think a lot of guys, when we think of greatest of all times, naturally sometimes it does, people go towards those three.
Yeah.
Do you think Federer's class and how many amazing moments you think sometimes can take that away from Serena? In that, like, he might be regarded as the GOAT? Are those two, like, the male and female versions, and then actually it's, I would choose Serena, or, like, do you get what I'm saying? And
I think Nadal takes Federer away from that conversation.
Really?
I think if... the difficult thing is, actually, I think Serena has... I mean, obviously she had... Obviously, she had Venus, but she never had that. She never had that unbelievable rivalry.
Yep.
That everyone looked forward to every final being.
Yep.
She was always fighting these upstart. Not, I mean, that sounds a bit, well, just like
there were, you know, coming. She had Sharapova, there was Azarenka, you know, now she's got Osaka. Like, there are definitely very, very good tennis players that have had their moments, but, like, but never one that's been around for 10 years and Serena, like, always struggled with and wanted to be on the other side of the draw.
I mean, like, I was tuning in to Federer and Nadal in 2005 and I'll still tune in now.
Yeah.
And she hasn't had that long rivalry that has covered only, 40 Grand Slams.
Like you said, and has only been, like, potentially with Venus at times when those two came together, and they almost peaked at different times, so it was hard for them to have that rivalry.
Yeah. I think I'd probably give it to Serena.
Yeah.
But it is one of the things that I wish...
We had been able to see,
yeah. Right, so thank you very much for listening to that episode of the J-Rod Sports Pod, looking back at an exciting weekend of sport. Join us on Tuesday when we're going to be looking back at everything that's been going on in the world of sport this weekend, including a packed round of NFL matches and the return to the Premier League. But until then, please make sure that you be a friend and tell a friend about the J-Rod Sports Pod.